So chapter 20 of the book of Numbers, which is the middle of the second reading of Parshas Chukas, when it's not Mechubarim, and this year it isn't. The Parshas are not conjoined. And chapter 20 tells us, Vayoveyu b'nei Yisrael, the Jewish people came, Kol Ha'eda, the entire nation, Midbar Tzin, to the Tzin desert. This happened b'chedesh harishon, in the first month. Doesn't say a date though. Vayeshev ha'om b'kodesh, the nation settled in Kodesh, Vatamas Sham Miriam. Miriam, the elder sister of Moshe and Aaron, passes on. Vatekove Sham, and she is buried there. Truth be told, there are many questions which kind of come to mind at this point. First and foremost, like, where are we up to, so to speak, now in the history? Where are we in the storyline? So Rashi tells us that this business of Kol Ha'eda means, it's not like the Jewish people traveled piecemeal. They always traveled with everybody. Whenever they came everywhere, it was always everybody. So what does it mean, Kol Ha'eda? So Rashi says the meaning of Kol Ha'eda means that this was Eda Hashlema. This was the perfect or intact whole congregation, which means Shekvar Mesu Mesei Midbar, that those upon whom it was decreed that they would die in the desert had already passed. So this Eda, this congregation, was intact, complete. This was the congregation that is, if you will, perfect. Everybody here was wholesome. And Elu, it was these, Parshu L'chaim, that had now been separated from their brethren for life. So now we know that this is at the end of the 40 years. That's clear. At the end of the 40 years, this is after the last of the Mesei HaMidbar who died, which was in the month of Av. And this is after that. This is a whole, almost 7 months later, 8 months later, and we're in the month of Nisan, because you know it's B'chedesh HaRishon. And what happens there? In the month of Nisan, Vatamas Sham Miriam. Miriam passes Vatikover Sham. The Targum Yonasan Ben Uzziel says that Miriam's passing was on the 10th day of Nisan. And it's interesting because the Shabbat before Pesach is celebrated as Shabbat HaGadol. A great miracle happened there. And usually, Jewish holidays are celebrated on Hebrew dates, not on days of the week. This is probably the only day, or the only holiday, only anniversary, which is marked on the day of the week it happened, rather than the day of the year. And one of the reasons that's given is that since Miriam passed away on the 10th day of Nisan, and since the original Shabbat HaGadol was on the 10th day of Nisan, so therefore they didn't want to celebrate the day of Miriam's passing. It left them a negative taste. It was a very, very sad undertone. And that's why kind of they didn't focus on the day, but it's like, you know what, we'll observe and commemorate the Shabbat before rather than the day of. At any rate, that's tangential. Vatikover Sham, Miriam is buried there. Who buries her? Our sages in Yalkut Shemayni tell us that this was Moshe v'Aaron, her two elder brother, or younger brothers together buried her. So what's the obvious question? Miriam dies in the desert. Where does she get buried? Right there in Midbar Tzin. Yosef had died nearly 2 centuries earlier. Where did he get buried? In Shechem. And the people have to carry the bones. And according to most of the Chazals we have, it was not only Yosef's bones, but in fact, all of the coffins, of all of the Shvatim, were carried back to Eretz Yisrael. So from the time that the Jewish people had come into Mitzrayim and the passing of the Shvatim, they knew that they were going to take these coffins, transport these remains to Eretz Yisrael and bury them there. And we have this tradition that Dina, the daughter of Yaakov, is buried in Eretz Yisrael, and Miriam has to get stuck in the desert. It seems totally unfair. So the Medrash Esfa says that this is because Miriam was equal to Moshe and Aaron. And just as Moshe and Aaron were buried in the desert, so too Miriam was buried in the desert. Now what might this mean? The Meshech Chachma claims this is because this area will become Eretz Yisrael in the future, and Miriam's burial is like the burial of Sari Imenu, kind of placing the stakes down for the future, because you can't rent a burial spot. That's permanent. But perhaps there's, when the Medrash compares it to Moshe v'Aaron, perhaps we could invoke this notion, this idea, that the Rebbe talked about the fact that the Rabbeim did not elect to be buried in the land of Eretz Yisrael, as most other Gedolei Yisrael did, but rather were buried where they had lived and where they had ministered and served and functioned. And the Rebbe bases his explanation upon a Medrash that says that when the shepherd was sent out with the sheep, he can't come home without the sheep. He comes home with the sheep. So Moshe Rabbeinu was took this flock out of Mitzrayim. Where's the flock? They're in the desert. When are they coming home? They're coming home when Mashiach comes. So when will Moshe Rabbeinu come? When Mashiach comes, when there's Tchias HaMesim, when the dead are resuscitated, when those who left Mitzrayim will come back to life, that's when Moshe V'Aaron come with them. And perhaps we see from here that Miriam was a leader to such a degree, not only during her terrestrial lifetime did she provide for the Jewish people, but that she needed to remain in the desert with the Jewish people who had died there, with the nation of Israel who had died in the desert. And really what will happen when Mashiach comes is that it will be Moshe, the Aharon, and Miriam. So this is not Chas V'Shalom, Pchisus HaKavod. It's not less than the honor or dignity of Miriam, but in fact quite the contrary. She's afforded the same exact treatment as the greatest leaders of all time. Now Miriam passes there. Rashi is concerned, is bothered by the fact that we talk about Vayovoyu Kol Ha'edo, which this is like an extraordinary event. The Jewish people have finished their journey. It's the next year in Nisan, and Miriam dies. It's like it's almost so anticlimactic, and it goes together in the same parsha. And why did the Torah choose to talk about this in Parshas Chukas that begins with the discussion of Parah Aduma? So Rashi says, "Lama nismecha Parshas Misas Miriam." Why is it that the narrative of the passing of Miriam was included in the parsha of Parah Aduma? Why was it mentioned elsewhere? It doesn't have to be in order, and this anyway isn't in order. Especially because the parsha of Parah Aduma was actually given in the month of Nisan 39 years earlier. This is one of 10 things that had been given, 10 events that happened on the first day of Nisan when the Mishkan was consecrated. So this parsha kind of like really reels. It starts off at the beginning of the 40 years when the Mishkan is just consecrated 39 years ago. And then here it fast forwards now in chapter 20, 40 years later, when Miriam is passing. And they're put together. So Rashi says, on the level of Pshuta Shal Mikra, Loimar Lacha, this comes to teach you. Ma Korbanos Mechaprin, just as offerings in the Beis HaMikdash, bring atonement. Another version of this is, Ma Parah Aduma Mechaperes, just as the red heifer serves as an atonement. Af Misas Tzadikim Mechaperes, the passing of the greatest of Tzadikim is able to atone for the sins of a generation. It's pretty amazing. This is like the day after Gimel Tammuz. This is the Chidas. Many years. The passing of Tzaddikim, the terrestrial passing of Tzaddikim, brings a tremendous amount of atonement for a generation. Like an offering, like a Parah Aduma. Vatamos Shom Miriam. Now, if there is corollary drawn between Moshe V'Aaron, we know that Moshe V'Aaron died, so to speak, with the kiss of death, which is a special passing of Tzaddikim. And that means it's not through the Malach HaMavos. Typically, death, the soul is harvested by the proverbial angel of death. It's a real thing, only it's probably not as he's portrayed in Hollywood movies, but it's a real thing. And here, we hear that tzaddikim die with the kiss of God, that the breath of life is drawn out, so to speak, just as Hashem blew the life into the nostrils of Adam Rishon, that the greatest of tzaddikim have the neshama removed in that same way, with the kiss of death. Like the Gemara says, in Brachas, al zeis yispal kol chosid, that chassid, a pious person, prays for the moment of need. What's the moment of need? The Gemara brings a number of different opinions, and one of the opinions is the moment of passing. And the Gemara says the moment of passing could be as difficult as taking wool out of thorns and thistles, which is like just never happens. And, you know, sometimes you see this just horrible, like people just don't die. And sometimes it says it's like taking a hair out of milk. It's like, so here we hear the passing of Miriam was like, we don't hear about the passing of Miriam with the same drama as the passing of Moshe V'Aaron. So Rashi says, no, do not think, Chas V'Shalom, there's any difference. Afhi b'neshika mesa. Miriam also passed with the special passing of the greatest of tzaddikim. She also passed in the most gentle, in the most natural way. And there was no difficulty. It was like a kiss of death. So if so, why doesn't it say it? Umepnei ma'alei nemer al pi Hashem. Why doesn't it say by Miriam, by the mouth of God? So Rashi tells us, quoting the Gemara in Bava Basra, She'enoi derech kovet shomayla. It doesn't sound appropriate when we speak about God, since oftentimes we speak about God in a masculine tense, even though the whole notion of gender is ridiculous. It's not any more than God eating lunch or having a nap. But nonetheless, since we use a masculine tense, and since Miriam is a woman, it sounds odd, strange, less than dignified. And that's why the Torah doesn't use that terminology. Ube Aharon, and by Aharon it says, Ne'emar al pi Hashem, it does say al pi Hashem in the Parsha of Elamasi. So what happened? We now move from the narrative of Miriam's passing into the aftermath. In a word, a water crisis. There was no water. They rallied against Moshe and Aaron. And then verse 3 says, Vayorev ha'om im Moshe. The nation quarreled with Moshe. Vayomru, they said, Velu gavaynu begva achenu. If only we had died the way our brothers died, lifnei Hashem, before God. Incidentally, I'll go on a limb and tell you that it seems this is only the men who made the issue, because they didn't say achesenu, they said achenu. I mean, presumably it was only the men. Usually the men made trouble, the women didn't. But here, certainly, it says vayarev ha'om, and we know there was problems. All right, so question one. What does the lack of water have to do with Miriam? It's like the next verse. The Jewish people arrive in Mibetzin, Miriam passes, and the next verse is there's no water. So Rashi says, clearly, there's a connection. You cannot ignore this. And he says, Mikan, from here we see, Shakol arboim shona hoyo lahem habe'er bizchus Miriam. From here we can see that all 40 years, the miraculous well that would constantly travel beneath the ground and open its mouth wherever the Jewish people camped, this all came in the merit of Miriam. And how do we know that? Miriam's not here terrestrially. All of a sudden, the well doesn't open terrestrially. It's there somewhere. We can't access it anymore. So accessing this miraculous well had to have come through the schus, through the merit of Miriam. And therefore, when she passes, it's no longer there. That's what the Gemara in Taina says on page 9. And Rashi says, that is Pshut Shel Mikra. The Kliyaka wants to go further and say that they didn't mourn Miriam appropriately. And because they didn't mourn Miriam as they should have, and not as many people attended a funeral, the people were punished. But really, there's no indication that there was a punishment here, or they did anything wrong. And therefore, Rashi doesn't like follow that approach. He says the simple approach in the Gemara says that the water came b'schus Miriam, it was b'schus Miriam. End of story.
And why is that? Because she drew Moshe from...
Why is this? Good. Hang in there. That's what we talk about today. But first, let's round it off here. The people said, Velu gavaynu. What does this mean, Velu? So Rashi says, Velu here can be interpreted as halavai shagavaynu. Ha! If only we had died. What did we stay alive for? To die of thirst? So, you know, the word lu could, in truth, be interpreted in a number of different ways. I mean, in England, it means whatever, not such a clean place. But that here in Hebrew, the word lu means, for example, Bilam said, if only I'd have a sword in my hands, I'd kill you. He said, Lu yesh cherev biyadi, if only I had like a sword in my hands. So that would mean if only. And sometimes it could mean maybe. Like it says, the brother said, Lu yistameinu Yosef, lest Yosef despise us, lest he have hatred and acrimony towards us for what we did, and lest he seek vengeance. And then here we have the way Rashi interprets halavai, if only. Not lest, not if I would have, but if only we would have. If only we would have. This is, and that's Rashi has to explain halavai, because there are actually three different interpretations of the word lu. So he says, if only we would have died, b'gvaya achenu, the death of our brothers. So Rashi says, b'misas achenu b'dever, in the death of our brothers with pestilence, sh'misas tzoma miguna mimeno, to die of thirst is more grotesque fashion of dying than dying with a illness. So he said there was plagues, the Jewish people sinned, they got plagues, fine, give us a plague, just knock us out. But you have to draw it out through thirst, until we have no hydration, till we finally expire. So there's actually an interesting, the question is raised, who are they referring to? Rashi says clearly it's referring to the idea of Dever, and there were Jewish people who died. Many Jewish people died from different forms of pestilence and of plagues that swept across them. However, there's the Psikta Zutasis claims that they said, V'lu gavaynu, if only we had died the way Korach and his people died. How did they die? Some were swallowed by the ground. They're called bluim. And some were swept, were burnt consumed by fire. They're called the Srufim. So that's what they meant. The Rabbeinu Bachaya maintains that this is talking about the people of the Midbar. They would go to sleep on the night of Tisha B'Av, and in the morning, if you didn't crawl out of the hole, you got covered. And that's how it was. Every year Tisha B'Av, everybody had the same yard site. Everybody was saying Kaddish on the same day for a whole 40 years. But they died in their sleep at least. The Mincha Belula says that this is the aid of Rav. This is not the real Jews. These are the people who joined them and they had ulterior motives and they weren't for real and they jumped on the bandwagon. And you know who's Achenu they're talking about? They said if only we would have died with our brothers, the Egyptians, 40 years ago, at the crossing of the Reed Sea. At any rate, we have different ways of understanding this, but certainly the people were not happy and they were kvetching and they were complaining. It's interesting to note that in verse 2, they assemble against Moshe v'Aaron, but when it comes to quarreling, they seem to quarrel only with Moshe. Right? In verse 2 it says, Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. And in verse 3 it says, Vayarev ha'om im Moshe. So why is that? Rashi actually doesn't address it. And the Medrash Lamdeinu maintains that Aaron said to the Jewish people that they have good intentions. They're probably coming to demonstrate their affection for Miriam. You know, feel bad they didn't mourn her properly. That's why they're here. That's why they're kvetching. And Moshe said, oh, no. Trust me, that's not the case. I know these people better. And how does he know that? Because as Vayekarlo did, they were not led by the leaders. When there's no decorum, he says, I've seen this movie already. When there's no decorum, then this is a sign of rebellion. And indeed, he was right. The tour maintains that they assembled against both of them, but in the end, who was the driver? Moshe. Moshe was the boss. He was. So in the end, the actual quarrels with Moshe, but they assembled against Moshe of Yaron. But it's interesting how, say, look, Aaron always tried to look at the positive side. You know, Aaron was Erev Shalom, Erev Shalom. Aaron is Chesed, but we know Moshe is Emet, and Moshe knew the truth. He saw right through this. He said, this is not mourning. This is not sadness. This is plain, simple, old-fashioned kvetching and complaining. And they're at it again. So the obvious question that we're going to answer this morning is, why is it that the well came specifically b'schus Miriam? Lucky you, Nathan, that I've asked the question. I don't know anywhere else, by the way, that this is explained. I never saw another source for another answer. I'm not saying there isn't. I just never saw one. Page Yud Ches in the Biurim book, volume 2 on Bamidbar. Hadavar Deirish Biur. This phenomenon requires elucidation. Madua Nitna Habe'er Dafke B'schus Miriam. Why was it that hydration or the miraculous well came specifically in the merit of Miriam? Why not B'schus Moshe? After all, Moshe is called Roya HaNeman, which on a simple level means a trustworthy shepherd. What does the trusted shepherd do?
Waters the sheep.
He or she provides for the sheep. Miriam is not called a shepherd. Aaron is not called a shepherd. Moshe is called a shepherd. Did you ever hear of a shepherd who only gives food and he has to call somebody else in to give hydration? Or is it like, I can give food, that's all I can give. I give you pasture sheep. If you have to find water, that's somebody else's merit. Don't look at me. You're a shepherd. If you're a shepherd, you got to, you know, hatch, match, dispatch. You got to take care of everything. You can't just only decide to give them food. So why would it be that Moshe Rabbeinu somehow does not count here? And here we need the merit of Miriam. Incidentally, you have to point out that in the end, the water does come back. And whose merit does the water come back? In the merit of Moshe anyway. So if anyway it could come in the merit of Moshe, why did it have to be in the merit of Miriam? It doesn't make Miriam greater. Miriam was great, and Miriam was wonderful, and Miriam is equal to Moshe v'Aaron, and so on and so forth. Fine. What's up with the well? It's a woman's well, a feminine well. Why did it have to, so to speak, fall along the lines of gender? So the Rebbe suggests a phenomenal beer here, an original explanation, suggesting that, yes, it does specifically fall along gender fault lines. Al tafkidim shamayim. If you want to talk about water from a Torah perspective, in Torah literature, b'tizoynas ha'adam, with regard to the sustenance and nourishment or hydration that it provides for a human being, Kosev HaRambam, Maimonides writes something very interesting, which is also fresh and new. They don't believe that there's a source for this prior to Maimonides. In Maimonides, Rambam is talking about the halacha that says that sometimes if we want to extend the area of scrimmage, or the orbit in which we can travel on Shabbat, that we have to make what's called an Eruv. We have to, so to speak, set food and drink aside. When we set food aside, or sustenance aside, it's as if we say, you know what, our place of dwelling is not really here. Yes, our beds are here, but our meals are placed elsewhere. And that allows us for an extension. We can file for an extension, and therefore, for a mitzvah purpose, be able to walk somewhere. And it's called an Eruv. An Eruv is a mechanism that can supersede, sometimes, what we call rabbinic limitation. And so there's this rabbinic limitation, even though the idea of tchumen is biblical, but tchumen of 2,000 amma is not biblical. Even Rambam holds that tchumen, that the area of scrimmage, is biblical. Even Rambam, the Mefarshim say, agree with the Ramban and others that tchumen is not biblical in its specific scrimmage of 2,000 amot. The real biblical extension of tchumen is the size of the camp of Israel, which was 12 mil, 12 farsangs. So the concept then of the rabbinic limitation of tchum, which is only 2,000 amos, can get extended by something called an eruv.
Is that less than a mil or more than 12 mil?
Far, far less.
Far less.
Okay. So the interesting halacha is that you can't use water. Can't use water.
For eruv, okay.
For eruv, you can't use water. And the Rambam sets out to explain this. He says, why not? Water is the most basic sustenance. It's the most basic. I mean, after air, the first thing you need is water. Like Mario Antoinette said, let the meat drink wine and eat cake, but that's ridiculous. It makes no sense. Without water, you can't survive. So the Rambam says, and Rambam was a great doctor in his time, and exactly the language that we would use in today's scientific terminology, I'm not certain, but I'm sure it matches. Shahamayim eina mazinim kishal atzmam. Water in and of itself does not nourish. Possibly this means water is non-caloric. You need calories to live. So what does water do? Why is hydration so important? It is what enables calories to travel throughout the body. If a body is not hydrated, if a person is dried out, all the calories in the world are not going to be able to sustain him. There needs to be hydration. But hydration's purpose is that the caloric intake should be able to make its way through the body. If you will, it's like water as if the conductor. The waterway, it's the way it travels. Ultimately, the blood, which is enriched through the food, the calories that are ingested, the proteins and the carbs that are ingested, will be enriched, and that blood goes and feeds and nourishes all of the cells of the body. But without hydration, it can't happen. Okay, that's what Rambam says. So what does this mean in Avodas Hashem? What does it mean? It has to be seen through the prism of serving Hashem, through what we would call spiritual, moral, or ethical perspective. So the Rebbe says the following. Hamazon misamel es hatfisa v'ha'akor ha'pnimis. Food tends to metaphorically represent a person's inner awareness, understanding, appreciation, apprehension of a particular reality. So, for example, Torah is metaphorized as food. The Torah is, you ingest it, it has to be understood, and after it's understood, it becomes ingested, and then it becomes a part of me. Eventually, it forms my Weltanschauung. That's how I see the world. So the Torah, which represents this, represents the idea of intelligence, cerebral activity. And from there, hergeshus, also emotional activity. Both the emotions and the intellectual pathways are illuminated through Torah. And so we serve Hashem based on the Torah's instructions and the Torah's inspiration and the Torah's guidance. So what does water represent then? Mayim esablim es hafna masa shel hakara pnimizu. The water is what carries this awareness. It's what makes sure that it's actually permeating every area of the rubric of our lives. So the whole fabric of our life, in order for it to be enriched, I need to have both ideas and ideals, but I need to have also hydration. If I have no hydration, no amount of ideas or ideals are going to be able to power or, so to speak, enrich my life. Life becomes dry. So there's an idea, but it remains in cloud nine. There's a feeling, it remains dormant. It's the water that kind of brings it forth. It's hydration. It's that moist, the moist nature of moistness that hydration brings. Just as we might say that this applies to everybody in their own Avedas Hashem, kachi kayemes b'mivna haklali. So too, because everything that exists on a general plane will also exist in a microcosmic way as well. If it exists cosmically or globally, it'll have to exist microcosmically or locally, parochially. Shaboy kayemes chalukas tafkidim ben habal isha. From a Torah perspective, gender lines are not an imaginary thing. It's a real deal. Even if this is not politically correct, that's what the Torah says. The Torah says that men and women are intrinsically different. Yes, it's true there's a range, and there are some women who are more masculine, and there are some men who are more feminine, but the bottom line is that male and female is a division that is not artificial, but inherent. That's what the Torah puts in. Zachar nekeva bara oisim. God created males and females differently. And because God created males and females differently, God gave males and females different purposes in life. So let's look, for example, at the job of a man and a woman in what we would call a marriage or a home. So tafkide shel habal, very proverbially speaking, is lekvoya esekrenis habasis shaleim emed habayis. The husband's got to bring home, so to speak, the basics. The food basics. He's got to bring home, we say, the Gemara talks about this idea that the man goes out, he's a breadwinner. But he brings home wheat. He brings home barley. Can you eat wheat? Can you eat barley? The woman has to develop this. So in the spiritual interplay between husband and wife, or father and mother, who are supposed to create a home and an environment for the development of the future Jewish people, for the next generation, so there's the husband or the father whose job is to provide the general pathway of derech ha-teirah v'mitzvahs. This is the idea of chinuch ha-yelodim, the raising of children in the right way. Ve'ilu tafkidu shel ha'isha, the job of the mother of the home, is liyisim ikreines elu b'poil b'chai ha-yom yom. It's to bring these ideas into everyday life, to download them, if you will. That's the concept of hydration, taking the basics and making sure that basics are drawn into everyday reality. So it could be very nice, it's nice theories, nice concepts, but they have nothing to do with everyday life. They have nothing to do with reality, or as we would call practicality, boots on the ground. And therefore, the Rebbe maintains, perhaps this is the reason, nitnu l'bnei Yisrael ha-be'er, the water which represents hydration and its spiritual alter ego, was given dafke b'schus Miriam, specifically in the merit of Miriam. Benigud Laman, in sharp contrast to the manna, which was the nourishment, like I guess it was caloric, sheyarad b'schos Moshe. So Miriam brings hydration, Moshe brings the sustenance. Shekein, hamayim misamlim es tafkidim shel hanoshim shebi Yisrael. This too is a frame in instruction. This too is a lesson in life. And it's teaching us that the job of Jewish women is lahafnim esekrenus hayesaid, to bring all that foundational Yiddishkeit into the pragmatic reality of our everyday existence. B'chol prati yisnagusa shela odom b'chaye hayoyim yoyim, in all the details of everyday life. And this, the Rebbe posits, is perhaps why Miriam is the one who brought us the well, and it was Moshe Rabbeinu who brought us the manna. There's much more to be said. One more time to say it.